Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's gonna hate you. And she's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
Progressive Radio Network. This is Nature Bites Last. It's NBL on PRN.FM. We're broadcasting tonight from the Mud Hut in New Mexico before a live and lively studio audience. There you have them. I'm Guy McPherson. I'm going solo tonight. I look forward to the return of my much more clever than me sidekick, Mike Sliva. The theme song is provided as a gift with our thanks by AfroZen. You can find more of his work on SoundCloud. For those of you who detest this song, please write and record a better one instead of writing email messages to me telling me how awful it is. We'll consider using your song instead if it's actually better. Tonight's first segment highlights news beyond the echo chamber of the mainstream. First up, from September 5th at countercurrents.org, comes an article penned by John Chuckman titled Penetrating the Darkness, covering two Malaysian airline disasters. Chuckman connects the two airline mishaps and makes an excellent case for the U.S. shooting down the plane that mysteriously disappeared and supporting Ukraine in shooting down the other. The U.S. mainstream media continue to call out the Russians with no supporting evidence. Not that the mainstream media are known for recognizing evidence, much less seeking it. Again, that's from September 5th on countercurrents.org. Next on the menu is an article from Michael Krieger yesterday at libertyblitzkrieg.com. Krieger describes a Kentucky man's arrest and 8 days in jail for, quote, terroristic threatening. In other words, he posted lyrics to a song on Facebook. The song is Class Dismissed by Exodus. It doesn't end there, either. The 31-year-old man will be forced to undergo a mental examination because, as you know, posting song lyrics on Facebook is just crazy. This is not a joke. The war on terror is being used to justify putting people in jail for pretty much anything. There's a reason the Brevard County Police Department in Florida recently bought 8 Apache helicopters. That reason has nothing to do with your freedom. As our regular listeners know by now, we offer brief opinion pieces each week. In this segment, we hear from radical perspectives that cut to the root of an issue and expose some truth that has widely been hidden, ignored, or filed under oblivious for the general populace. We call this segment Breaking Hopium. This week, we have 2 contributors. We begin with Alexis from Alexandria, Virginia, who describes the difficulty in seamlessly transitioning from life in the city to simple agrarian living. Take it away, Alexis.
This is for those of us that think that we're going to seamlessly transition from our office jobs to our happy agrarian future. So I want to attend an upcoming event, which I don't actually have money to attend, but I noticed that the event host is offering an opportunity to barter your time, i.e. labor, in exchange for admission to this event. So I agree to this because it's a permaculture farm, and I think, great, I'll get some time on a permaculture farm and some sunshine and fresh air, some exercise, all good things. So I go to this place, and first I'm doing some weeding, then some composting, and cleaning some gutters. Then they ask me to chop down a large hedge, which is taller than me, I'm 5'6", and probably 6 or 8 feet long, with branch shears. So I have a manual tool and I'm hacking this down. I get halfway through when I find that one of these bushes is covered in poison ivy, which I'm deathly afraid of because I'd spent time earlier this summer hanging out on a farm and walking a goat on a leash, which is a bad idea, by the way, unless you want poison ivy. So I back away from the poison ivy. I decide I'm going to break this up and go and do some weed whacking. Mind you, I've never done any weed whacking because no one would hand me a weed whacker because they would if they know me. But anyway, so I go over to the weed whacker after hours of hacking down this hedge. And so I pull the starter to get it going. My hand completely locks up. It turns basically into like a dead claw hand because at this point I must just be so dehydrated because it's 90 degrees and humid that my muscles aren't even responding to whatever my brain is telling it to. So I have to take my other hand and manually pry my hand off of the weed whacker. Fortunately, it wasn't going yet. So I spend a little bit of time rejuvenating myself and go back to the weed whacker. So I get it going. So I'm doing some weed whacking and all of a sudden I get attacked by biting flies. The biting flies are landing on my clothes, but they're biting me through the clothes and they're like heat seeking missiles. So they're following me everywhere I go. So I have the weed whacker going at this point. I'm getting bitten by the flies and running from them because it hurts. And next thing I know, I plow through a patch of poison ivy with the weed whacker. So now I'm being bitten by the flies. I've sprayed poison ivy everywhere, all over myself and God knows what else. And this is pretty much what happens when people with office jobs think they're just going to go to a farm and know what they're doing. And you're probably saying, hey, we won't have power tools in the future, but I just want to let you know, I was really happy to get a power tool after spending hours trying to hack down this bush. And then insult to injury is the fact that after I'd completed all this, they complimented me on how much ragweed I'd pulled up. And I am actually allergic to ragweed. So in conclusion, I have poison ivy and suffering through days of allergies. And this is pretty much how it goes when you think that things are just going to easily transition from one state to another. So good luck, everyone.
Obviously. Simple living takes a lifetime to learn. We conclude with Forrest Palmer, who connects the football season, just getting underway, to numerous ongoing phenomena. He predicts the sport won't be around much longer. I agree, but perhaps it's just wishful thinking on my part. Take it away, Forrest.
Everyone is happy, and the ritual of ultimate male bonding is upon us. It is football season, and from the Pop Warner football leagues all the way up to the professional ranks, comprised of children who can barely walk to men with size and strength that are the personification of the world Herculean, the stands of stadiums across the nation will be filled every weekend with souls living their personal tragedies, triumphs, hopes, and desires through the play on the gridiron. As we have seen over a century of football and viewed its popularity skyrocket over the past couple of decades into the stratosphere, it may seem like there are no limits to how this sport will be able to grow into the future. But, and there is always a but, as a proud Doomer, I have to ask myself, as well as the collective culture, how long can this continue? Not to rain on anyone's parade, but here are some things to think about as we watch these football games over this season and into the next few. As players have become bigger, stronger, and faster over the past few decades, this has been wholly due to an industrialized food system predicated off the use of fossil fuels, where it takes 10 calories to get 1 calorie of food. This has cheapened food, if only momentarily, to such a degree that people are now able to gorge themselves to make these massive individuals who are that size for entertainment purposes only. As the stadiums have become just as gargantuan to match the size of the players on the field, taxpayers have been stuck with the bill of funding these stadiums to the tune of $4 billion as of 2012. What this means is that we don't have enough money to support Western infrastructure, as urban blight is pretty much the standard in the American city, yet the state has determined that the taxpayer has enough for stadiums. And as we are constantly seeing gas prices increase with peak oil and resources at a premium, how much longer can these athletes be transported from city to city to play one another for a three-hour game in length, but what is actually only 60 minutes of time for the game and 11 minutes of actual playing on the field when you factor in all the other stoppages? Not much bang for your buck, methinks. Then there is just all the exorbitant amount of energy expended for the game itself. The Super Bowl has been estimated to add 500 tons of greenhouse gases to the environment. Although this is a drop in the bucket compared to the approximately 100 million we add to the environment every 24 hours, it does illustrate how even the things we consider leisure activities and just sitting down on the couch and watching other people is harmful to the environment. As we have seen these athletes start to show more and more signs of brain trauma due to colliding with one another at light speeds, I'm comfortable in saying that the orgasmic sensation felt by the average fan of seeing these men bash each other and a large amount of money offered up primarily to impoverished urban and rural black children who see this as a lottery ticket to leave their abject circumstances, nothing will circumvent any rational discussion of the short list of topics I have offered in this sad tale of woe. If this is the case, how many years will we have left of football? I can't prognosticate about that since there are too many unknown variables. Although the only thing that is certain is that this game too shall pass, just like the battles of Roman gladiators in the Colosseum that was used to satiate the ignorant people in that culture centuries ago. As I know, I personally have no power to stop or start this sport at this juncture. I can only give one piece of advice. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Thank you, Forrest. Thank you, Alexis, for those bits of breaking opium. Tonight, my guest is an IT program manager who recently delivered a presentation on methane release. You can find it on YouTube under the title, The Arctic Methane Monster's Rapid Rise. Welcome to Nature Bats Last, Jennifer Hines.
Hi, Guy. Thanks so much for having me. It's really a pleasure to be here tonight.
Well, thanks for calling in. We might have time for a couple calls tonight. Stay tuned with fingers on the keypad. The number to call is right there at the top of the page if you're listening live at prn.fm. The number is 888-874-4888. Jennifer, you delivered a presentation about methane hydrates last month. How did that come about?
Well, I'm a concerned private citizen, and I've really taken a very passionate interest in global warming in the last couple of years and its developments, and more particularly methane hydrate. And I've been an avid reader of the Arctic News Blogspot for some years and had become somewhat obsessed with all this amazing and alarming data that's been coming out lately about methane hydrate emissions and about the rapidly changing situation in the Arctic. And I had been reading other bloggers like Robert Scribler, who write about this unfolding warming event and all of its implications. And I had pretty much been become obsessed with the Arctic and methane hydrate because it presents such a very real and present danger to us, and it just seems to be invisible for a lot of people. So when I began to understand and grok the full impact and the possible future consequences of our CO2 emissions, I was absolutely appalled, and I was also deeply alarmed and kind of amazed. And if anyone hasn't seen it yet, Chasing Ice is an absolutely fabulous documentary that clearly illustrates how quickly the situation in the Arctic is changing and how quickly the ice is melting. So, in terms of making this video, I have been a participant in a Tipping Point forum through Corelight, and I had been asked to give the forum a talk about methane hydrate and the situation in the Arctic. And I accepted this opportunity, and I did not yet have a presentation, but this presentation that you saw is my attempt to bring a very difficult subject to light in the very gentlest way that I could. And this information is really tough to deal with at an emotional level, but that's how it came about and why I made it.
I think you did a remarkable job. I encourage any of our listeners who haven't seen it to go ahead and take a look. Again, you can find it on YouTube under the name The Arctic Methane Monster's Rapid Rise, and that's by Jennifer Hines, our guest tonight. So you're not a scientist, Jennifer. You're a project manager.
Yeah, that's correct. I am a project manager by trade. And I guess the the Earth needed a little project management, so I just kind of went at it. That's true. But even though I'm a project manager and I'm not a scientist, I have a very technical mind, and I have a real love for technology. And I had a deadline that I was working towards, and so what I did, I just kind of went into hyperdrive mode, and I was... You know, I mean, I'm like a lot of people, I might be somewhat fear driven. Maybe you can relate to that. But I had this presentation to get done, so I just went at it, and I just grabbed all of the graphs and all of the maps and all of the data, and I already had a good understanding of it. So after I had gathered it all, I just created slides and sequenced them in a way that worked. And then I tried the presentation out a couple of times with friends. And then I presented it to the forum. So what you see and what you hear on that presentation is actually that particular presentation to that Tipping Point forum about methane monster. So that's
and
how it came about.
Where is the Tipping Point forum? Where was this held?
Corelight, it's corelight.org, all one word, corelight.org. And it's a group of spiritually minded people, and we process various issues about the tipping points that we're having on Earth right now. There are an awful lot of them. And this is a way for us to emotionally process these issues.
Right. Now, you told me earlier that you're a private person.
Yes, that's true. I have been an entirely private person my entire life. So,
how did you feel when the video of your presentation began to receive lots of attention?
Yes. Well, I have been a very private person all my life, Guy. And to have this methane monster presentation go global and viral at the same time has been a pretty surreal experience for me. But, you know, when I gave the presentation, I wasn't even focused on that. I just knew that this was an important presentation. A very good friend of mine kind of coached me, and she's the one who made the offer to go ahead and give this presentation. But I think that the presentation gained a lot of legitimacy when Sam Carana and team and the Arctic News Blogspot gave it their definitive stamp of approval, both in YouTube, and then they included it on the August 8th edition of the Arctic News Blogspot. So at that point, that really gave the presentation the legitimacy it needed to go global. And I've checked, done a couple of searches in Google lately, and it's really gone quite global. It's gone deep. It's in all. It's gone very, very deep in Russia, incredibly deep. But it's in Finland, it's in Japan, it's in Ukraine, it's in Greece. It's everywhere in the world. All these video sites all over the world have downloaded it and they're listening to it. So I think that actually this presentation is going to facilitate a more global awareness of this situation. And to be honest with you, my personal reaction and how I felt about my very personal accounting of our predicament, I mean, anyone who listens to the presentation can hear, there are a couple of times I'm a little bit emotional. But I mean, how can you really talk about this without getting emotional? And if you are talking about it without getting emotional, I would beg to differ, and I'd say that possibly you're not taking it all the way through, because it's huge, you know. But I mean, I really do think that it's so important to give people the information that they need at this time so they can start to process this information. This is the biggest and toughest information to ever take on board, and we're going to need a lot of help to kind of get through this mentally.
Yes, I agree. In addition to the folks at the Arctic News blog, Sam Carana, you mentioned, also Malcolm Light and others, you cite a lot of mainstream scientists in your presentation. It would be nice to have full citations for all those references. Is there any chance you can make those available to the public like me?
Yes, I'll go ahead and I'll work on that, Guy. That's not a problem. I'll go ahead and I'll put together a full citation list of everything.
That would be awesome. Thank you. This is sure. Nature by Blast on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for listening to NBL on PRN. I'm with Jennifer Hines. Jennifer, almost no climate scientist will say what you said. Why is that, do you suppose?
Well, I mean, I'm not entirely sure that that's the case. I mean, you probably know better than me. What I can see, and I mean, I've gone through these Arctic News Blogspot articles. I think they're pretty pointed that extinction is nigh unless, you know, things change drastically, which, of course, I doubt they will. But I think that truly the Arctic News Blogspot scientists, Arctic scientists, are the warriors on the global warming front. And I think that they provide us, you know, compelling and chilling data about us in the situation rapidly unfolding in the Arctic. However, what I did see is that possibly some of their data needed a data translator function, and possibly that's where I came in. So, you know, this methane monster presentation What I do is I take complex Arctic scientists and I make it accessible for everyone in really simple concepts with pictures and the whole thing. And it just makes it available to everybody because really this, I mean, when you think about it kind of at the gross level, the science, it can be pictured, you know. And so, yeah, I know. I know. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I'm sorry. We had a little technical.
The internet connection seemed to have dropped. I'm sorry, Guy. Where was I when I left off?
Well, I again return to my statement. Almost no climate scientist will say what you said. You point out that a lot of people do say what you said, but then they finish with, "We need to do this," or "We need to do that," or "We need to turn this."
Well,
ship
okay. So now you come to the crux of the matter, don't you? That's the difficult truth. They do say that we need this and that, but can you hear me, by the way, Guy?
Yes, I can hear you clearly. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, so they do say we need to do this and that. All right, so the truth of the matter is, and this is science, this is not my opinion, the carbon dioxide levels take about 50 years to catch up. So we are currently realizing the warming trends due to our carbon dioxide emissions that we had in the 70s. And I don't think that a lot of people realize that. And that's the truth. I mean, it takes carbon dioxide about 50 years to fully warm up, fully. You know, that's just the way it is. Methane's different. Methane's pretty fast. So, I mean, you know, today, you know, another article came out that, you know, carbon dioxide emissions are increasing again and increasing more sternly. So, honestly, Guy, I don't know what to tell you except the obvious, and that is that there's no way out of this.
Well, I
agree. Sorry. With you. I mean, it's so hard to say. It's really
hard. I agree
to
with
say.
You completely. The lag between carbon dioxide emissions and temperature rise is based on James Hansen's work, and he projects a 25 to 50 year timeline during which 60% of the warming from carbon dioxide will result. Most people have taken the average of that 37.5 degrees and rounded up and called it 40 degrees. But in any event, it's clear that there is a human generation delay between carbon dioxide emissions and temperature rise. And so I think that there is no going back. In addition, the folks at the who focus on methane hydrates have a comprehensive plan that they've developed to cool the Arctic, and I don't see any way that that can work, even if there were a worldwide effort to give it a try. And so far, I haven't seen anybody making that sort of effort. Okay,
that's
so I
true.
Think we're on the same page.
I mean, I completely agree with you. I really do. I don't think there's any way out of this, and I think that, you know, I mean, a lot of people get pissed off, but, you know, the geoengineering effort is noble, but I do not think it will work.
No, in fact, there have been at least 5 refereed journal papers that have come out within the last 6 months, maybe 8 months, pointing out that geoengineering probably won't make things better and likely will make things worse.
Yes, I've seen those as well. Possibly additional warming from all the, you know, the sulfuric, you know, sulfides or whatever it is that they're using. I mean, I've heard things about that, but don't know much about geoengineering. I haven't studied it. It hasn't been the thing that's grabbed my attention. What's really grabbed my attention is Arctic methane hydrate, because that's where the rubber meets the road for me.
Well, and I think that's right. I think methane is running the show at this point. I think the days of carbon dioxide being in control of temperature rise are behind us. Because,
yes,
you know, atmospheric methane at this point is, what, 2.5 times above where it was at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, our levels of methane have gone up significantly more proportionally speaking to where they were at the turn of the Industrial Revolution than carbon dioxide does. And it's a much more dangerous gas. It degrades more quickly than carbon dioxide, for sure. Carbon dioxide takes hundreds of years to degrade in the atmosphere. And methane can degrade into a fairly safe gas, you know, over 100 years. But initially, when it comes out, it's a monster.
Yeah, that's right. It is a monster. It has, well, I've seen various estimates. I think a reasonable estimate is more than 100 times the the warming potential of carbon dioxide, molecule for molecule, in the relatively short term. Now, blogger Robert Scribler is starting to catch up on the information you presented. In his post from August 27th, only a couple of weeks ago and 3 weeks after your presentation was posted on YouTube, he wrote an essay titled "Methane Monster's Grumbling Goes Global, 570 Methane Plumes Discovered on Atlantic Ocean Seafloor." Here's the punchline. Quote, "What I've just described is the process that most scientists believe occurred during the worst mass extinction event in the geologic past, the Permian extinction, a hothouse event that killed 95% of life in the oceans and 70% of life on land. And what humans are now doing to Earth's airs and waters through CO2 and related greenhouse gas emissions may well be shockingly similar." Will you comment on Scribler and what appears to be him catching up with the monster?
Presented. Absolutely. Well, I think that it's, you know, no accident that it's so synchronous in any case. You know, I think everybody reads everything about everybody. But in any case, let's talk about this Permian mass extinction, because I did bring that up in the presentation. And in our current situation, we have really strong parallels to both the Permian mass extinction and also to the end of the last ice age. So, as far as earthquakes in the Arctic, you know, there's that earthquake fault that goes all along Greenland and all along the Gakhal Ridge, and it kind of goes up through the Laptev Sea, and then it terminates over in Siberia. And what we have seen is been an increased frequency of earthquakes in the Gakhal Ridge. And generally speaking, that area is pretty quiet. I mean, this is new. It's not like there's always earthquakes up in the Gakhal Ridge, but there are two continental plates that come together right in the middle of the Arctic. So they do see increasing seismic activity lately. And what the thing is that's dangerous about it is this, there's a high likelihood of causing some kind of slope displacement, both in the Gakhal Ridge area and in particular in the East Siberia Arctic Shelf. And this is because there are a number of fault zones. They kind of like crinkle off, and they're becoming more active, and the shifts are occurring in the Arctic tectonic plates. And it's really already been observed that the tremendous amount of ice melt that we've had in Greenland is actually lightening the island of Greenland, and they're experiencing like there's some sort of isostatic rebound activity that's starting to come into play. That means that the actual land mass is getting lighter and it's lifting up ever so slightly. And this is potentially contributing to the increased seismic activity. I mean, it's all connected, and there's a huge fault that goes right along Greenland, and it's just been so active lately. So with all these extra earthquakes, what we see is that there can be landslides, and this can be within like these different Siberian seas. And these landslides, when they happen with the earthquakes, they actually uncover potentially layers of methane hydrate that have been isolated and covered and frozen until then. So the problem is when the Arctic temperatures get warmer and the Arctic sea ice cover retreats even further, which it is. I mean, it may not melt at the end of, you know, 2015 in the summertime. I was very bold, and I was kind of looking for shock. I mean, whether the Arctic melts in 2015, 16, 17, 18, 19, or 20, I honestly think it's beside the point. It's melting, and that's really what needs to be looked at. You know, we just need to understand it as scientists and as people who are interested in this sort of thing, because when the Arctic temperatures get warmer, sudden and catastrophic methane releases do become more likely. It's just, you know, things melt, things go off. It's chemistry. And, you know, if methane releases in high quantities, then that's going to melt the ice even further in the Arctic Ocean. And, you know, after a point, and, you know, there's some debate as to where we are in this process, we find ourselves in a interlocking, self-reinforcing, runaway feedback loop, and that will warm the climate still further. And when you get into that situation, there's very little that you can do. So that's it. That's my comment.
If you keep using words like terms like isostatic rebound and self-reinforcing feedback loop, academia is going to be calling you and wanting to give you a job. So I just need to warn.
Oh, dear God, help.
So run. Just run. It looks like
we're going to have... Sorry, I'll stop.
It looks like we are going to have time for calls. So anybody who wants to call in, the toll-free number is 888-874-4888. So, Jennifer, what's next for you? Will you continue to connect the dots on methane? Will you continue to speak about climate change? Have you?
Well, I haven't honestly thought about it, Guy. I mean, you have to understand, I didn't even plan this anyway. So this is like all a huge, giant surprise for me. I was just trying to get a presentation done and meet a deadline and give a damn good presentation. And maybe I hit it too hard because at this point it's going global. But I really don't know what I'm going to do in the future, Guy. I haven't really thought about it much. But be assured that I'll be sure to keep you in the loop if I do something along this line. I don't know if I'll be able to keep my hands out of it. I love it too much.
Yeah. Oh, so you love the doom?
Well, no. Oh, it's a difficult thing. It's hard to explain. Because I know what I know, and because I've come to the conclusions that I come to, in a very strange way, it makes me feel better to know everything that's happening as it happens. Because I do feel that we are at the. I mean, you know, I don't mean to be. You know, but you're the same way. I do understand that we are at the end of our time, and I feel it's my job to witness this thing and to really make good notes of what happens when a planet falls apart, because it's going to happen fairly quickly. And, you know, we've got responsibilities to our children and our grandchildren and all sorts of things like that. How do you break these news to – how do you work with this? It's almost an impossible body of knowledge to work with, you know, from that – standpoint, but I really enjoy, you know, getting into it and learning every single thing that's happening. You know how it is, right?
Yes, it does become something of an obsession, and every day I tell myself I'm going to walk away from it, that we know
it. That's the problem with it. But I would like to say that lately there have been some very pointed methane hydrate articles in both the BBC and The Guardian, and these are really mainstream publications. They aren't in Britain, but they're mainstream publications. And I do think that very quickly the methane-aware perception of the mass consciousness is going to start to open up. And I really do think that methane hydrate is shortly going to become a known issue. And I think that possibly this video will change to, you know, contribute. I'm not saying it will, but, you know, possibly contribute to this opening in the public awareness. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Well, I agree, but then what? Some people have told me, in all seriousness, that telling the people what is coming will just cause chaos to break out. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's, you know, Guy, I have exactly the same conflict. And when I made the video, do you remember our first conversation, like when we first talked, I said, I'm so sorry for causing all this trouble. Because I honestly didn't mean to do it. It's just me and my little PowerPoint, you know, situation. It got out of hand, and then, you know, all of a sudden this is happening. And yes, I've gotten calls from Australia. I've talked to people, you know, there's a DJ lady on the Australia, and they've spent the last three, you know, shows discussing the video and processing it and wondering how to deal with it. And I don't have the answers. I honestly don't. But I can tell you that I have been working with this because, it's too much information to take on alone. And I have been working with Carolyn Baker and her group in Boulder, this resiliency group, and it has helped a lot because it's given me personally a place to go and talk about these things, because honest to God, I could not hold the knowledge inside anymore. I was just, you know, it was just like too much. And plus, I became a real bore. I mean, honest to God, I was like, anytime anyone would listen to me, I would like go on and on about methane hydrate, the situation in the Arctic, global warming, the real and present danger, and I had become a complete bore. And I also was tired of people's eyes glaze over when I mentioned methane hydrate because they thought it was cow farts. You know, it's not. So
the entire live studio audience here is laughing and pointing at me when you say things like being a bore. You're talking about climate change.
Are you hearing your own thoughts coming out of my mouth, possibly?
Yes. Exactly.
Yes. Now, and also, we should bring that up. You're going to be writing a book. You're writing a book with Carolyn Baker on Extinction Dialogues right now, aren't you?
Yes, the book is called Extinction Dialogues, How to Live with Death in Mind. And it's actually available in hardback now and will be out in paperback by the 1st of October. You can find that, dear listeners, at Tayen Lane. That's TayenLane.com. And so we both know Carolyn. We have that in common. You've been working with her, and I've worked with her. It took us all of about 2 weeks to write that book because we were both so passionate about the work we were doing on it, and we collaborated so nicely on it.
You know, and I'd like to speak about that too, passion, right? That methane monster video that I put together, it took me about 2.5 or 3 weeks to put it together. And I literally practiced it twice or three times, and that was it. And, you know, what I'd like to say about that is when you're really passionate about something, things can happen fast. I mean, super fast. You know, the difficult and the impossible becomes trivial.
Right, that's right. And once you become obsessed about a topic, that's what happens. You can go deeper and faster than you ever imagined you could.
Yeah.
This is Nature Backlash on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for listening to NBL on PRN. Jennifer Hines is with me tonight. You have the audacity, Jennifer, to predict human extinction in the near term.
It is audacious. It is absolutely and completely audacious, and I cannot even believe that I did it. I honestly can't, and I did.
How near?
I'm sorry?
How near? Everybody wants to know the day they're going to die.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I wanted to know this. I did not shirk away from this information. As a matter of fact, the more dire the information looked, the harder I dived at it until I completely understood what the heck is happening with our Earth, because I really, really, really wanted to know, because I feel such a spiritual connection to our beautiful and gorgeous Earth. It's such a lovely, lovely place, and I love it so, so dearly. And so that's why I went after this like a rabid animal, because I really needed to understand what the heck is going on and what kind of imbalances were we experiencing and what were the consequences of those imbalances. And that's the question I had to answer for myself.
And I think you answered it well for yourself and also for the rest of us. It's a stunningly well put together presentation, well organized and well delivered. We will accept a call or two tonight, 888-874-4888, if somebody wants to call in. Jennifer, what's next for you? Where do you go from here? Are you going to join me in the Court of Doom?
Well, I mean, there's always a possibility for that. We shall see. I mean, no one's invited me to do anything. I talked to a lovely woman named Shirley in BagLadyProductions.com in Australia, and that's the only thing I've talked to, you know. So I've not, you know, maybe, Guy, I don't know. What do you want to do?
Well,
see, I'm going to put that back on you.
I feel an urgent need to keep getting the news out, even though I tell myself every day that I'm going to stop now, that we know enough that I can stop, that I just need to spend my time, limited though it is, which is something we knew from the beginning, right, since we were 10 years old anyway, that I need to spend my time hiking in the wilderness. And not obsessing over more information that I get
looking. That's right. And you know, I'd like to speak about that because I did dive at this very, very hard, but I think I'm an odd sort of being. I don't recommend that anybody do what I did, but I think what's most important, use death as an advisor in a good way. Love the people who are in your life. Have high quality thoughts. Think about your death, because it does come to all of us. It comes to all beings. Think about what you believe. Think about the things you love. Think about the beauty of this earth. Think about your gratitude. Think about how lucky you have been to come to this earth and have a wonderful lifetime here in whatever form it's taken for you. Those are thoughts I think that are important. You know, it's really, really super important to keep balance, you know.
So do you spend a lot of time in nature, and have you spent more since you delivered this presentation, or about the same?
Yes, well, I've been pretty busy because, I mean, I don't just give presentations for free in my life. I mean, I've got a job. But, yeah, I do spend a tremendous amount of time in nature whenever I can. I've been very blessed in the place that I live because the Colorado Rocky Mountains are there beckoning, and I can get into the Rocky Mountains in probably an hour or so, you know. And so, you know, I live surrounded by beautiful beauty, and I'm extremely grateful for that. But nature does restore me. There's a certain beauty and a wisdom and a quiet and a serenity and a depth that you see in nature that you don't see when you're just surrounded with man-made things. That's how I feel.
How has your life changed, or has it, since you reached the conclusion of near-term human extinction?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting question. How has it changed? Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you how it's changed. It's changed because I've become a different person because of it. I had been, like most people, you know, going along, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, I'm very driven. I'm a driven person, whatever I do. But I think that it's done a couple of things. Number one, I dearly, dearly appreciate every moment that I have on this earth because it's such a beautiful earth. And also, I feel more driven and more focused about this situation, but I haven't gotten any clarity about it except to try and make people aware of it who are ready to be aware of it. You know, honestly, do you want to know the honest truth? I don't want anybody to be aware of this presentation who's not ready to be aware of it. When this presentation came out, I said, I hope only 100 people listen to this. This is going to devastate people. This is too much. This is too much. And I didn't even mean to do it, but it just like happened. And so, you know, if people are ready to deal with it, you know, balance is the key. So since I've learned about near-term human extinction, I've really tried to spend a lot of time thinking more deeply, loving the earth more, and loving people around me, and being grateful for the gifts in my life. That's how it's changed me.
That's great. That's a great response. We have a caller, Andrew from Ohio, has a call.
If you need help, hang up and then dial.
Andrew from Ohio. All right. Sorry for the disruption, folks. This is Guy McPherson. You're listening to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for hanging in with us. We do have a question from the live studio audience. This is Kate in New Mexico. What do you got for Jennifer, Kate?
Jennifer, I love your message. Sounds like do what you love and what you believe in. And I'm hoping you'll tell us a little bit more about that in terms of you personally. What are the things that you love and the things that you believe in that you're going to pay more attention to now while you've got the time to do it?
Oh, absolutely. That's great. And it's all about quality of life. Thank you for that wonderful question. And, you know, things that I personally believe in, you know, I mean, we're getting into to personal beliefs. But, you know, I'm a spiritually based person, and you probably got that if you listened to my video. I really didn't mean to kind of get so public about that. But I'm a Buddhist, and I study with a Bhutanese Lama, who's a Rinpoche, and I've recently been to Bhutan. And I'm a big traveler, which probably is a huge no-no for sustainable living, but I just love this earth so much, and I've traveled all over this earth. And I grew up overseas. I grew up in Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War. I grew up in Laos. And went to an American school in Laos. And so consequently, Buddhism is a really kind of big part of my mind because I grew up with it. I mean, I when I was waiting for the school bus when I was a kid, I would see all the Buddhist monks going by, you know, when I was like 9 and 10 years old and stuff like that. So, you know, I guess I'm your typical Boulderite in a certain way, you know. I mean, you know, an IT professional who's a Buddhist who's interested in global warming. I mean, it's almost cliche, but that really is kind of who I am. So there you go.
Now, there's somebody in the studio audience who was in Southeast Asia at the same time you were, and I wonder...
Oh, is that right? Who's that?
I wonder if, Steve, you have a comment on what life was like at that time in that place.
I was from probably not doing the same thing as you were. I was a helicopter door gunner at the time, so I probably didn't enjoy all of the beautiful memories you have of Southeast Asia, I think.
But what country were you in?
Pardon?
What country were you in?
I was in Vietnam in the north for part of my tour, and then the central region in the near the Delta.
Okay, great.
Pardon?
Great. I've been to Saigon, actually. I was in Saigon, actually, during the Vietnam War. One of the only little American girls who's ever been to Saigon for vacation.
That was probably a beautiful place. I was there and then up north in Da Nang and Chu Lai. So I got a good view of the country, and my memories of the beauty of the country are still there. But, you know, I also have a question about methane, if I could. Are all the emissions we hear about methane, like from the seabeds and creatures and also from the Arctic, are they all as insidious? Is that methane hydrate, or could you maybe mention that?
Well, again, I'm not a scientist or an expert, but I'll just tell you what I know. And Guy, if you know any different, please, you know, chime in, because you probably know a heck of a lot more than I do. But I don't see a heck of a lot of methane hydrate information in the news. I mean, lately they're coming out with it in the BBC and the Guardian, and occasionally in the American news. But, you know, people in America are so ADD, by the time the article's over, they've already kind of jumped onto another topic, and they think that, you know, a game on Facebook is the same thing. You know, I mean, it's kind of an insanity we've got going on. But in terms of methane hydrate, you know, I know that there's a lot of discoveries that have currently, they're coming to light, like all over the east coast of the United States. They have found some pretty extreme methane hydrate deposits. Also, of course, obviously in the Arctic. New Zealand has huge methane hydrate deposits. And apparently Antarctica does too. And it's a fairly common substance. You know, I mean, cows make methane, as we all know, you know. So did that answer your question at all, or what exactly do you want to know?
Pretty much what I was thinking, I just read some article 2 or 3 weeks ago that said that in the, not in the Arctic Sea, but in the oceans in general, they found methane was emitting from, I think, the seabeds, and much of it isn't actually reaching the surface, but much greater concentration than they had ever seen before. And that's what I was wondering, if that was the same as what we're seeing, that is coming up from the Arctic as it's melting.
It's all the same. Absolutely. Now I understand your question. All the methane hydrate deposits are all the same. And the reason that they're being discovered now is because these seas have absorbed probably something like 97% of the heat that's trapped in our planetary system from the excessive greenhouse gas emissions and you know, the methane that's in the atmosphere. So, you know, consequently, you know, we are in the situation that we are in, and we're seeing a lot more methane hydrate discoveries all over, and they're all coming up more. And, you know, for example, in the Arctic, the initial methane hydrate plumes, they're called, were fairly small. You know, they weren't really all that big, and then they got like larger because this whole deposit of methane is like warming up, and it's, you know, starting to come up, and there's nothing you can do about that. You can't really put the cork back on that bottle. You know, once it starts to go and it gets into feedback loops, it's going to take care of itself, unfortunately. All that methane is the same stuff.
I think we got Andrew back in line from Ohio. Andrew, do you have a comment or a question?
Andrew has nothing to say, apparently.
Well, thanks for spending time with us, Jennifer Hines. It's been a pleasure to have you on Nature by Flast, and I look forward to a future conversation as well.
We applaud.
Wonderful, Guy. It's been such a pleasure to be here with you all tonight, and I'm really happy you had me on. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Okay, each week we seek out a doomer who not only goes beyond the status quo in their rhetoric or analysis, but also provides insightful and useful information to the issues at hand. We have two doomers for this week. The first is John B. from Alabama, who pointed out to me on the phone this afternoon that the mouse scurrying around his kitchen for the crumbs it can find there is far better prepared than humans for collapse of industrial civilization and climate change. And the mouse has a shorter lifespan and a smaller brain, so he's not nearly as obsessed with these topics as I am. Thanks for pointing that out, John B. Our other doomer of this week is Joan Haynes, who writes on the Near-Term Human Extinction Support Group page on Facebook. It's weird. I'm simultaneously planning on extinction and survival at the same time. I just registered for continuing education classes for my profession in another city, but I'm fearful of flying and being away from my family in case a crisis hits. I'm looking into a car for my 16-year-old and talking to her about college, but I think using petroleum is evil, and I think a college degree is worthless when we are wiped out by radiation. I just keep doing my thing because I don't know what else to do. I'm so, so grateful this group's here because I have no one else to talk about it. I'll wrap up tonight's show with a climate change submarine update that can also be found at naturebatsalaska@mcpherson.com. But first, apparently, the third time may be a charm. We have Andrew back from Ohio. Andrew, do we have you back from Ohio?
We want Andrew.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, what do you got, Andrew?
Okay. Who is this, by the way?
This is Guy McPherson.
Okay. My question is, it pertains to misanthropy. How to overcome just the general dissatisfaction with the human species, given what we've triggered?
Well, that's a fair enough question. Although, I have a couple of comments about it. First of all, I would argue that it's civilized humans that have got us into this mess. We lived more than 2 million years as humans and didn't turn ourselves into Homo colossus. Instead, we lived relatively light on the land and didn't ever go into human population overshoot at the level of the planet until civilization arose a few thousand years ago. The second thing is, I think most humans are pretty decent and are just trying to figure out how to go about their day and go about their lives. And most people are not abject sociopaths. Unfortunately, the people pulling the levers of industry are abject sociopaths, so that's problematic. Okay, I'm gonna skip the climate change summary and update for today, and we're gonna go straight to the wrap. Please tune in next week as I interview a couple people involved in the climate march, and also the protest later this month in New York City. Be sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last, and the Progressive Radio Network, and join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM. Feel free to post questions you'd like us to address on the show. Please continue to follow my blog, Nature Bats Last, for further updates and speaking tours. On the latter topic, I'm hosted by Peter Melton in coastal Central California and Southern Oregon in about 10 days, and then by Kevin Hester in New Zealand in 6 weeks. You can keep abreast of those tours on the blog and also on Facebook. Finally, if you're finding yourself in need of support in dealing with these heavy issues, please find the Near-Term Human Extinction page on Facebook and join the conversation. There are plenty of people going through a similar emotional roller coaster who help provide some personal insight into these monumental issues. Last week in that group, J.C. Walker Jr. posted the following comment.
All right, my apologies for the extreme technological difficulties. When you live in New Mexico at the end of the road, this is what happens. Last week in the Near-Term Human Extinction Support Group on Facebook, J.C. Walker Jr. posted the following comment. I think it's perfect. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put the Holocene back together again. Nice line, J.C. And it illustrates that doomers can be fun and funny. See you on the radio next Tuesday evening when the topic turns to climate change activism. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end, as hollered out by the live studio audience here at the Mud Hut,
Nature Bats Last!
Thanks to all the excellent contributions this week and to Afrozen for the theme song. That's a wrap.
Mother Nature, she's gonna